Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 665. I'm your host, Jim McDowell, and joining me tonight, all the way from the UK, is Rich Jowitt. Rich, how are you doing over there?
I'm good, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. Glad to have you on the show, so welcome.
Thank you. I'm good to be here.
So, Rich, you answered the call. You said, hey, we need somebody else to help with the show. You volunteered. Tell us why.
Well, yeah, it's an honor and a privilege to get the chance, Jim. Been listening to the show for at least 10 years. I've loved it all the way through. I've often thought, you know, it'd be great to have a chance to put my views and a little bit of the history into the show. So here we are.
So what's your history with motorcycles?
Been riding myself on the road. I don't have any racetrack experience. I had neither the budget, the bravery to do that. But yeah, I've been riding on the road for, well over 20 years. Been following motorsport of various sorts for, since the 1980s. Started off with Formula One. I think you're a bit of a Formula One fan as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
Morphed into bikes in the 90s, really, when, you know, 500s really started to hit it. And as soon as that class went four-stroke MotoGP, I was sold. So I've been a full-on MotoGP fan ever since.
All right. Well, typical Blit. He likes his four-strokes, people.
Yep.
So, all right. So with that, a little bit of housekeeping to put up front. Hey, if you like the show, please go over to iTunes and give us a review, good rating. That helps us reach more people. And if you really, really like the show, you can make a donation if you choose. You can do that by going to www.motopodcast.com. There's a link to PayPal and Patreon. You can donate as little as a dollar a month, and every little bit helps us keep the show going. With that, we'll get into some news, Rich. First thing up in the old news column here is somewhat sad news. Maybe, and now sad's a too strong word. Let's call it disappointing news. The fact that the MotoGP calendar has changed yet again. Carmella announced that Phillip Island is canceled, as well as Japan. Therefore, Malaysia has been moved up 1 week, and the good part of this one, it's good bad news, and another race has been added at Portimao. That race at Portimao will be 1 week before Valencia, so we still have 19 races. Thoughts?
Well, Miguel Oliveira is going to be a happy man.
Yes.
He didn't exactly do well when we visited there earlier in the year. But
got a better
he
bike
seems,
now.
He seems to be on form again, so I guess he's going to be pretty happy about that. It's sad to lose the races, but that's the year we're in.
Yeah. I get it. Listen to Carmella on MotoGP.com. If you have a subscription, I don't think it was a free video, but he was talking about how, you know, when they're going to come to Texas, basically they bought out three hotels that are very close to the track at COTA. And so basically everybody goes into a little micro bubble, if you will. All the teams, all the Dorna personnel, everybody stays at those three hotels, and they kind of move together as a convoy in and out of, or going to move as a convoy in and out of COTA. Now, they wanted to do that in the island, but, and I did not know this. If you knew it, Rich, let me know. But they don't really leave the island. They actually stay in houses with people there at the island, which I thought was pretty wild that, you know, they stay there on the island. So that is a disruption to their normal lives. And if they have to go out and get the, you know, groceries, food, gas, things like that, that they need for their daily lives, that puts everybody, a lot of people, in jeopardy. So the Australian government was definitely not down for that. So they said, nope, we're not going. And I understand it. Again, it's the world that we're in right now, and this is how we're going to get out of it, is by doing these things. And if we can continue to get the vaccine rolled out and we keep seeing these good results of the vaccine, hopefully we'll have every race in the schedule back again. Japan's no real surprise. They're lucky they're going to get the Olympics in. They have literally no fans going to be at the Olympics whatsoever. So that's sort of expected. Now, the added Portimao, I'm fine with that. We could go to Portimao every other weekend and I'd be happiest camper on the planet, because I think
great track. Yeah,
that's spectacular. And, you know, it's at the end of the year, which is kind of like last year. You still have Valencia as a season ender, so we just have to take what we can get. We at least get all the races that we were promised.
Yeah, I mean, we always hear it being described as a traveling village, so I guess it shouldn't come as a surprise the way they organize things. But yeah, it's sad not to have Phillip Island again. But I guess, you know, Portimao is probably the closest you're going to get in terms of up and down. and just flat out speed. So, you know, I guess we just have to be glad that that one's back on the calendar again.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. And I would have gone back to Mugello too. I could watch that a couple of times over.
Yep.
No problems there. Second bit of news, Fabio DiGiantonio will make his MotoGP debut with the late Fausto Grassini's team during their start of the new Ducati era in 2022. Didn't think that Fabio would go up to MotoGP next year. Didn't think he was really, wasn't on my radar for going up there. He was having a, you know, he got off of the speed up chassis. He got onto a Kalex. It looked better. He's had some good races, but not that many great races. I don't know if it's a money sponsorship deal kind of thing, but, you know, if you're at that level, you have talent. You have to have talent to be at that level, I should say. So him going on to being in a MotoGP seat, well-deserved.
Yeah, from the things that I've read, I have the impression that he was a kind of a chosen one of Fausto's, and therefore they had something of a gentleman's agreement that Fabio was going to make the jump. But like you, I mean, it's hard to really see that it's entirely justified compared with some of the other competition that's out there. But you never know. I mean, people raise their eyebrows when Quartararo got the seat in MotoGP on the strength of, what was it, one win, I think.
Really possibly good two. Barcelona, and possibly then I think two. There was one other one, maybe two.
Yeah.
So maybe. I remember when that came out. I said, it was before he was ever announced going to MotoGP. We were talking about, like, well, there's no talent to go to MotoGP. And I said, well, I'd take a flyer on Quartararo. I look brilliant. It's the one time I'll ever get it right.
It's the really strange thing, isn't it? The guys that do really well in Moto3, sometimes they struggle in Moto2. And then somebody will randomly go up to the top bikes and do really well. So who knows? It's a shame that I personally think it's a shame that the team are running Ducatis and not Aprilias. But I guess we're going to talk about Aprilia later on.
Yeah, I think it's a shame too, but of all the factories, Aprilia is the smallest. So for them to create four bikes would have been difficult. So, but you still could have said, well, okay, Fausto, you get to keep this year's bikes because we'll have a new bike for next year, which is fine. And you could have done it that way, but then you'd have to have all the spares and stuff. And the way... we'll talk about now, but from what Aleix has been saying, they're looking at making a whole nother motor again. Now, if that motor doesn't fit in the same chassis or has different mounting points or whatever it is that they change, then you'd have a supply problem trying to give enough parts and pieces to Grassini to run year-old bikes, plus have enough parts and pieces to keep your 2022 bikes going. So I kind of get it. You know, but I kind of don't like it's, you know, as Skylar said last show, it's like Ducati is half the field, which is terrible.
Not healthy. Yeah. And I think I think the primary objection from the Grassini squad was that they would not get the same spec of bike as the works team. So I think that's probably why that fell through in the end. But all of these teams, I mean, Suzuki's the same, they're crying out for a satellite squad, really, to help the development. So I think it's an opportunity miss, really, for Aprilia, excepting that they are the smallest factory, as you say.
Right. I agree. I think Suzuki's the same way. I think Suzuki's missing a great opportunity to have a satellite team. I wanted to see Grassini with year-old Suzukis. I thought that had been absolutely perfect. Suzuki gets a lot there because then they got more riders putting more laps on bikes, which gives you a different direction in which you may want to take your bike because it's not where you want it to be at this time. So again, yeah, a missed opportunity here. I understand it, but you know, do you know how long Grassini's contract is with Ducati? I don't know.
No, I haven't read that. I must confess.
I haven't found it anywhere. No one said. So, I mean, if they've got like a one-year deal, maybe they just got a one-year deal. They'll come to Aprilia next year once Aprilia has got things settled. Who knows? There's always something in the background. Contracts are made to be broken.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is.
And all the teams are signed up, I think, now for quite some years ahead with Dorna, aren't they, in terms of a commitment to stay in the series. So you would have to guess that the likes of Suzuki in particular, and probably Aprilia when they're a little bit further up the development path, would want to see a couple more bikes on the grid.
I would think that they would. It looks better for them than to have, you know, it's better for the sport, it's better for marketing, it's better all the way around. I can't fault Ducati for wanting to have more bikes on the grid, and I can't fault them for wanting to have a plethora of different riders for their development work either. Again, I just don't like the idea that it's sort of half the classes is Ducati. But World Superbike was that way. What, 99? It was like the Ducati Cup because everybody had a Ducati,
yeah.
Right?
So yeah,
we've seen it before. Let's see. Next bit of news. Maverick Vinales, I saw this on GP1, said that he was tired of being a test rider at Yamaha. Wow, that one really shocks me. I'm like, okay, you come out, break your contract, say, I don't want to be with Yamaha anymore. And then you say, well, I don't want to be a test rider there because that's what I felt like. Okay, so you don't have that homey, cuddly, feel-good kind of relationship, okay? But then he goes on to say that the team didn't know what to do with his bike and that they didn't even think about trying to put Quattraro settings on his bike. Yeah, okay, correct me if I'm wrong. You're a factory rider in what is distinctly a prototype class. I'm not saying that you should be on that motorcycle and you should know, hey, we need more rebound, or that we need softer front springs, or we need a different angle on the swing arm, or we need a new pivot link for the rear suspension. I'm not saying that you need to know that nitty gritty of it, but I would expect that as a rider that you would say, okay, I'm having this problem with the motorcycle in every turn. If it's like, I cannot get any traction from this rear end of this motorcycle, I would expect that you should tell your crew chief and your team, and that they would start to make some adjustment to give you what you're looking for. Now, again, this is a one-sided story, and I'm not saying that GP1 didn't get this one right, but it is a translated website from Italian into English, so I could be missing something in the translation between the two. But still, it makes you go, whoa, because you're on the open market now to find another ride in what is essentially a packed house. And there's a lot of up and coming talent, kids that are going to want your ride. And you have a statement like that in the press, doesn't bode well for you, I think.
I just think, I mean, I like Maverick Vinales. I've always been somewhat of a fan of his, but I mean, I think it's just indicative that that relationship has just spiraled completely out of control, and I think his head is just completely gone to be saying things like that. Because if he's saying he doesn't want to be the test rider, it doesn't really shine a very positive light on him, given his performance on that bike, particularly when his teammate's been handing him his ass on a plate every other weekend. So you know, you're tempted to think that that's the bigger problem, really. He's the big paid rider in that team, and he's doing very poorly compared to his teammate.
Exactly. Again, it's like Formula One. You are only as the man you have to beat is your teammate, because he's the only guy on that grid that's in the exact same equipment that you have.
Yeah.
And you are not getting anywhere with it. And, you know, it's really interesting to me that what Maverick is saying that he's having problems with is exactly what Rossi says he's having problems with. So if you, and I thought about this for a second, like, okay, is there really truly a correlation to this? And you got to say yes, because when Rossi was doing well, call it circa 16, 17, 18, Maverick was doing pretty well too. So they must ride in a very, very similar way, or treat the bike in a similar way. And Quattraro must be on a polar opposite plane. Or, and then, yeah, I'm going to get hate mail for this one, but maybe Quattraro is the better talent, that he's able to adapt himself to the motorcycle to get the best out of it.
It's a results-based business, isn't it, Jim? So, I mean, you know, who's leading the championship by however many points it is? I mean, yeah, it looks bad for Maverick. And I just think the problem with him is, it appears to be, and this has got worse year on year, it seems to me, that, you know, one small thing rattles him or something doesn't go right, and everything falls to pieces very quickly. I mean, look at that debacle in qualifying. I think it was Mugello when he was being followed by Marquez.
He lost his shit.
Q1 or whatever. He just completely lost his mind and never came back. Same thing in Saxon Ring. You know, he dropped it, I think, in free practice 3.
He's dead last on the grid.
Last on the grid. Virtually finished last in the race, I think, or not far from that as well. So, yeah, it's hard to know whether... Well, we don't know that where he's going to go. I mean, maybe he won't go anywhere. But at the moment, I think the reported moves to Aprilia are a little bit dangerous, both for him and for them.
I would have to agree with you. I think you'd want to... Yeah. It makes you go back to thinking, like, they really should poach Oliveira. Although, Zarco is a dark horse for that. Like, I mean, he's been really good on the Ducati. But Zarco was really fast on a year-old Yamaha, too.
Yeah, I know we're jumping a little bit here, but I was very much in favour of you know, Dovizioso taking that ride, you know, next year, maybe doing some wild cards, but because he's a, you know, he's known to be a good development rider, and perhaps it's just that last, you know, that vital last half a tenth or whatever that they need to get, you know, Aleix, you know, a bit more consistent and a bit further to the front at the end of the race, because he seems to start well and then just gradually work his way back. And there's clearly something in that bike that's not quite there yet. And you wondered whether somebody like Dovizioso, okay, he's not going to win the championship on the bike, but maybe he can just get it to where they need it to be. Whereas Maverick, I'm not convinced.
No, I'm not either. Speaking of wild cards, because you brought that up, it looks like Cal Crutchlow and Danny Pedrosa may have wild cards in Austria or San Marino. Pedrosa seems to be interested in riding the KTM in a race because he said something to the effect of that would really help his development with the bike if he could ride it in competition to see where it is. Fair point.
Yep.
And then if Cal comes back, that gives you an idea of, like, well, where does – if Cal rides – it gives you a real good thinking of, like, where does Rossi stand in this? Because if Cal comes back and looks really good on the bike, out qualifies or out finishes Rossi, doesn't look good for Rossi then, does it?
It's, which is a distinct possibility based on form. I mean, you can only ever go on form at the end of the day. And Rossi's not having a very good year. I think that's... putting it reasonably gently for all the Rossi fans out there. I mean, I'm a Rossi fan. Everybody's a Rossi fan, I think, to a greater or lesser degree. But
I'm not the bigger Rossi fan. I'm not. But
I will always preface anything I say about Rossi of 2021 with the fact that he's, you know, arguably the greatest. It's always going to be impossible to say for sure. But was a, you know, great champion for a long period of time. But I think it's to me, you know, he's starting to damage his reputation by, you know, crashing more and more. He's not a young guy. He doesn't really want to be hurting himself at this stage of his life. I just wonder why he's doing it. Let's see what announcement comes next. But I'd like to see Cal Crutchlow do a wild card. Definitely. I'd particularly like to see him do one at Silverstone. In fact, unfortunately, that's not what was mentioned, but, he's been given, going back to what Maverick said, you know, Cal Crutchlow has been given a lot of credit, I think, for the improvement in the Yamaha this year. So again, it seems a bit, at odds with the position that Maverick's taking. But I think he's just saying anything he can to get back at Lynn Jarvis at this point.
I've thought about this too. Is Lynn Jarvis the problem?
I don't know.
I only say that because of, like, how he treated Ben Spies, which was completely unfair in how Ben got treated. But I'm an American and I'm biased. I'll leave it right there. Anyway, so again, we were talking about Rossi. So the last bit is Rossi is vacationing on his yacht. So he has a nice yacht now, apparently. And I'm like thinking, having seen his girlfriend on his yacht, if I'm Rossi, I'm like thinking, dude, why are you even coming back? Just stay floating out there. But yeah, there's no word yet on what Rossi's going to do. I think Rossi's going to call time on his. I think what he's going to do is call time on it, but I think he might do a Kenny Roberts type thing where he's going to come back and race a couple of selected races on a Ducati, like maybe Mugello, maybe one more time at Phillip Island. I don't know that, but I get the impression that Rossi is done except for where he wants to wild card.
Okay. I mean, part of me would actually really quite like to see him have another go on a Ducati. It's a very different bike, obviously, to the one he, failed on, for want of a better term, several seasons back. And it would be pretty cool to see him riding in his own team. I certainly think, as you say, I'm pretty sure we'd see him do a wild card or two, and that would be great. So, but yeah, the chances of him continuing on a Yamaha next year, zero, I think.
Oh yeah, he does. There's no way he's getting that contract renewed for a Yamaha ride. That is not going to happen. Which leaves Yamaha in the position of having, $10 million or so that they can go find somebody else and put on there. I mean, you could pay two guys $5 million and put one on the Petronas factory bike and put another one on your and the factory team, and do yourself a world of good, especially with a lot of the talent that's coming forward.
Yeah. I mean, you and Skylar on the last show were discussing, who might jump onto the vacant seats in Petronas, and I mean, I would really like to see Garrett Gerloff come across.
I would too. I'd like to see him on the Petronas seat.
Clearly, Raz Gataloglu is not going to come now, which I think is a huge mistake on the part of his management, but. That's the decision that appears to be made. I'm sure there's a clause in his contract somewhere that will give him the opportunity, should he win the championship in World Superbike this year, which looks as if it's on as a possibility at least. A stiff challenge against Jonathan Rea for sure. But and I'd also, I mean, obviously, okay, I'm going to declare my bias as a Brit now. I'd really like to see Jake Dixon get the call up on the other bike.
That'd be good.
He hasn't had a good year. He's still clearly struggling to get back from that wrist injury. But if you look at his performances last year before that happened, he was really coming on strong, and was by far and away the best out of that team on the Moto2 bikes.
I
Um,
think
and
he
he
could be.
does, he does have good form on big bikes. I mean, he was very strong in British Superbikes before he made the jump over to Moto2. So I think he would be worth a crafty bet. To come across and see how he does.
Take a flyer on that. Move McPhee into the Moto T bike and find yourself a younger kid, or take Bender to the Moto Two, right? To the Moto Two bikes. There's plenty of, I mean, you there's a pipeline of talent in Moto Three, so you can always find someone else to take that seat. So.
Which is in itself, I guess, an argument against somebody like Dovizioso coming across to Aprilia. I mean, maybe they want to go for a younger, somebody younger that might just make the jump, But it's an embarrassment of riches, really, in terms of what's available, in Moto2 and Moto3.
Yeah, I agree. That's all I got for news, Rich. So I think we'll move into the sort of a little mid-season review slash or report card of things, if you will, for this show. Since we get a 5 week break, we figured we'd kind of have a chance to actually do this. So let's start with Moto3. Just a few things. In your opinion so far of the nine races that we've had, what was the best race in Moto3?
I'm going to say Barcelona, just because it was so crazy. I think if you recall, Jeremy Alcoba was, I'm sure it was Barcelona, where he was playing those crazy tactics with a couple of laps to go, holding up the pack. I mean, it had been typical Moto3, brain out, gas on, right from, the green light. But the last few laps were insane. And it was just a, I mean, Moto3, for me, as much as I love MotoGP, and I do, but Moto3 is always the best race of the weekend, almost without exception. And that was a particular highlight, I think, that one for me. But you could pick any of the races this year, quite frankly, in Moto3.
Yeah, I agree. There hasn't been a bad race yet. I'll preface that. But the one that stands out for me is the second race in Qatar when
Oh,
Pedro
yeah.
Acosta
Yeah.
starts from the pit lane and wins the race.
Crazy.
That was one of those things where I watched it and then I watched it again because I really didn't think that that was possible. It's kind of like when Marquez won in, was it Portugal in a 125 where he started dead last? I think that's where it
It
was.
was. I'm pretty sure it was.
But yeah, so he was dead last and won it. And I'm like, okay, so this kid has just topped what I think is one of the best, most amazing things I've seen in the Moto3 class is you do it from pit lane.
However many seconds it was that he was behind, when they came out of the pit lane start. But
Yeah.
I mean, they were miles back, and to bridge that gap and then work through the pack and win the race was just, well, signal of the things to come.
Right. And I before everybody gets really mad at me, I get it. This the they had a track that was capable of you could do that on. Just that long straightaway. It not really any place on that track is very stop starty, so it's very much flow. But and I get everybody was chopping and cutting everybody off at the front. But the one thing that stands out is once Acosta had caught the pack, how fast he went through the pack and then led like it was nothing.
Yeah.
You would have thought that given all of what had happened to get to that point, the previous 15 or 18 laps, that he would have chewed up tires in some way, shape, or form to where he would have been impossible for him to have gotten any drive or been able to hold a line or any of those other things that you saw him do. Yet he still did it. So I am. That for me is the race.
But it was his second race in
Yeah.
Moto3.
Yeah. And then he wound up, that's what I'm taking for best race of Moto3 so far.
Yep, it's a good shout.
Yep. I liked yours too. Barcelona was true was good too. I liked it as well. Like I said, there's not really a bad one. You could pick any of them that were there. Since we were kind of talking about him, who do you think is the best rider in the class?
What, Moto3?
Moto3. Yeah, we're still in Moto3.
It has to be Pedro Acosta, doesn't it? You can't say anybody else.
Yeah.
I know everybody, and myself included, instant fanboy kind of adulation, and we've got to be careful, because he's a young guy and lots of years ahead of him, hopefully. But he does look like the real deal. He really does. And the thing for me is that, I mean, Dunlop must take the front tire off his bike at the end of every race and just wonder how on earth, the thing stays together, because that young lad is doing things with the front end of a bike that nobody else has done in Moto3, I don't think. In terms of the style of his riding, it's incredible what he's doing. The way he can dive up on the inside of a corner and not take people out and not tuck the front is staggering to me. And he can do it so consistently and cleanly. I don't recall him being involved in a collision that he has caused so far this season. I mean, okay, a little bit of rubbing perhaps, but not, one of the brain out, I'm going for it no matter what kind of moves that we typically see in that class. So he has everything. I mean, his racecraft, he's got every part of his game covered at the moment. And it's going to be interesting to see what he does in Moto2 next year, because he's clearly going to go up, because there's no point staying in Moto3.
Yes.
I feel a bit sorry for the likes of Sergio Garcia and one or two of the other class rookies in Moto3, because they're being thoroughly overshadowed. But again, it's a meritocracy, and he's way at the top. So what else can you say?
I will say this, Io has an incredible eye for talent.
Yeah.
It is amazing who what he sees and how he sees it. But you're so right. It isn't so. It's like, yeah, you could fanboy on it because, hey, this kid won from the pit lane. Well, then we get to the next race and he won again, which was, I think we were at Portimão, right? And he won that. I'm like, okay, that's two on the trot. That's pretty impressive for a rookie coming into this. Then we got to Jerez and he won another one. So like four races, the kid hadn't finished worse than second.
Yeah.
And you're
And he's like
almost,
two races ahead in the points,
yeah.
consistently. Well, it's unprecedented, I guess, in Moto3, certainly in recent years.
definitely recent years, there was a point where you're thinking, I'm thinking, my God, he could run the table. Like he could literally have a Moto3 championship locked up by easily two-thirds distance, and it's still possible. But we did see, I don't want to say kinks in the armor or cracks in this kid, but when we got to the big drafty tracks, the Mugello, the Barcelona, he was not out of place, and he wasn't in over his head, but he was not ready for that drafting game that gets played. And that's high-speed chess all the way around. It is a very different world coming from Red Bull rookies to a Moto3 bike with guys like Fanati, McPhee, Binder, who have been there for years, know what it takes to ride at the front the whole time, and when to go, when not to go, when to ride in the pack. And Acosta hadn't quite got that all figured out. There, of course, was the harrowing moment with Assen when they had the incident, the big crash in the third free practice session. That was scary. It was uncomfortable to watch, but the amazing thing was is he got himself out of the hospital, got back on the bike, and rode what I thought was a pretty damn good race for there. So he sort of has the grit of a champion inside of him. So all hats off. He, without a doubt, he has been the star of Moto3.
No doubt. And what's devastating about him, though, is that he finishes races all the time. I mean, I think he's only crashed in a race in Le Mans. I think I'm right in saying that.
Yes, he had that slide off, but that he had that slide off at was at three, the Dunlap chicane. Everybody and their brother loses the front there at some point in their career. It's the black hole of crashing for
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
these
So
guys.
he's devastatingly consistent and fast. So it's usually a pretty winning recipe.
All right, last thing for Moto3 is what has shocked you the most this year in the class?
We've just been talking about it. It's Acosta, really, for a guy to come in as a rookie and do what he's done, is shocking.
So my shocking thing is the fact that these guys still have not figured out how to back time a lap. This is going on, I think, 3 years. Ever since we've gotten to the Q1, Q2 format of qualifying, we've seen them try and not get around to get a final lap in qualifying. I do not understand how hard that is to do. If the track is, let's just throw a number out there, 1:42 for a fast lap on a Moto3 bike, that means you're looking at somewhere around 1:50 to get yourself around to get your final lap in. And these guys don't get there. I understand you want to tow, you want to go with somebody else, you want to have that draft and fight for it, but you got to go out there and set a time. You have to do that, and you just lose an opportunity to set potentially a fast lap because there's a lot of guys that had laps that are quicker than where they qualified, or you would have moved them up on a row, maybe not necessarily would have got them pole, but would have moved their position around a little bit, and you wasted it by not getting out of the pits in time. It's a frustrating thing to me to watch. It's just and you're still
Yep.
doing it. And then, of course, I'll go with all the dawdling online and offline and everything else because they have had a plethora of penalties and points assessed and blah, 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 where all these kids have gone to the headmaster's room and gotten a good speaking to. And they still just keep right on going. But the problem is, and I think this is probably the bigger problem, is that a lot of the MotoGP guys are starting to do that too. And there's a lot of dawdling gone lines now, and these kids are looking at, essentially the greats or their idols or people that they're going to look up to because they're at that high level. Well, if they're doing it, why can't I do it?
Yeah, race directions just don't seem to be able to get a handle on this one. And until they start handing out one race, bans or whatever, something that seriously dents people's points. But even then, I'm not really convinced it's going to make a change. It was shocking to see. I think it was in Sachsenring, a lot of dawdling going on in MotoGP, which I don't think we've ever seen before. To be honest, so I can't think of a case where it's been so blatant.
Yeah, there's been a few people that have been offline in the wrong place at the wrong time that have caused a problem or two.
People like Hector Barbera, used to be quite famous for hanging around waiting for somebody quicker, which is more or less everybody, to give him a helping hand. And the odd guy just, yeah, okay, you could understand that from time to time. But in Sachsenring, you had, I think at one point, four or five bikes just virtually parked at the bottom of the circuit before they went up the left-hander onto the main straight. Crazy. Moto3, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. The teams have to, take the blame on not being able to use a stopwatch effectively to know how quickly to get their riders out of the pit. Unbelievable how frequently that happens. And given the millions of euros or dollars that get invested in this stuff, to make such stupid errors as that is really quite unbelievable. And I know at tracks like Barcelona, for example, clearly the draft is really key in Moto3, but there are riders that go out and just do laps and are fast on their own. So I don't know why more people don't do that. This obsession with, being in the group, because half the time they wait around, get into a group, and then they just cut each other up and they're slower anyway. So I don't understand. I just don't understand. But
McPhee proved that point because McPhee spent the whole time riding by himself and qualified third row.
yeah.
Klutz close enough to the front. You don't have to be on the front row to win a Moto3 race. I give you pit lane starts as an example now. So.
I mean, I've just had a light bulb moment, which is that given that somebody like Acosta can start from the pits and win the race, and you can qualify on pole and finish last, why not just take the numbers out of a hat, and then you won't have anybody dawdling during qualifying because they won't be qualifying anymore.
I agree. I forget. I apologize because the one listener wrote in and said, just have a sprint race. That's roughly 5 or 10 laps. Perfect. Nobody's going to dawdle then, right? Because they're going to want to start by that and whatnot. I think there's things that you could do, but again, the argument back against it is like if you're not qualifying on a Moto3 bike, and you're going to be expected to do that kind of qualifying on a Moto2 bike, you have no experience to it. Now, I get, they're experienced motorcycle racers, but there's a little different process in there. I know when I was dirt tracking, I was a novice. We just drew randomly numbers to figure out where we were starting in our heat races. When I became a junior, you were now doing a single lap of qualifying on a dirt track. Well, that's, and again, your order was basically numbers out of a hat. And that's a little bit of pressure that you're not used to. And you ride differently when you are in that pressure. So I see where they need to have something, but I still like the idea of just races. I think it would just be way more fun. Let's move on to a Moto 2, shall we? Moto 2, what was the best race of the year in Moto 2?
I'm struggling to. I mean, Moto 2 is usually, let's be quite honest, is usually, or more often than not, it's a bit of a processional kind of affair. So fantastic races don't readily spring to mind in the Moto 2 class. Now, I'm probably not being entirely fair there. I tend to think of things that stand out to me as significant in terms of, some of these race results. And so the one that came to mind, I think it would have been Portimão, which I think was Fernandez's first win in Moto 2. Again, what was that, the third round of the season, I think, Jim? So yeah, significant again for a class rookie in a field that's high quality, it has to be said. But you have to find a way to be fast and consistently fast and get out front, and he seems to be pretty good at doing that. So it wasn't a great race, I don't think. It's a little bit hard to remember. I need to go back and watch it again, but it was significant in that respect for me anyway.
I'm going to agree with you with Portimao for slightly different reasons. Yes, Fernandez did win his first MotoGP race there, but it was that last lap charge that Gardner put on with that bumping of Joe Roberts at the last turn, which is pretty high speed to get back on the podium to sort of keep Gardner's championship alive. So I'm going to give that race one because the other thing about it too is that you talk about things that are of significance. Well, at the end, there's a picture of Joe Roberts in the Italtrans pits, and he just kind of shows the camera all the black marks up and down the side of his arm, where Gardner stuffed him. And he was all, you know, he had the big racer smile on his face that you see. And I'm like, you know, to me, that was really cool. I just, that race stands out for me. So I'm going to go with that as well. So let's talk about riders. Who is the best rider in Moto 2 right now?
I'm going to go with Gardner. Simply because, and I guess you have to, you know, really give, again, you mentioned him earlier on, but Aki Ayo, you know, the wonder guy when it comes to getting inside a rider's head. Gardner was always quick, but and in fairness to him, I don't think he was on top line machinery for most of his Moto 2 career prior to this year. But he doesn't look like the same rider that he was for the past two or three seasons that he's been in the class. To me, he's, you know, completely focused and fast and consistent again, and not making mistakes. So for me, he is the class of the field. And whilst, again, you know, the Brit in me would like to shout out for Sam Lowes, who's a quality rider, but he just crashes so much. And, you know, it's always been, other than the couple of good years he had in Supersport before he came across to the Grand Prix paddock, he's been so wildly inconsistent and kind of just crashed at critical moments and just lost that momentum. And it's so hard, I guess, as a racer to build that back up again. And Gardner has such a commanding lead now. He's the class of the field. So for me, it has to be Remy.
Yeah, I agree with you on that completely. Remy, I think, is probably the best rider in a class right now. I'll give shouts out to Fernandez and to Lowe's. Lowe's is no slouch. We've seen that last year, except for he can't seem to live with the pace that Gardner and Fernandez can put down. Whatever magic he had at the beginning of the year in Qatar isn't there anymore. They've lost the plot somehow, some way, and in some fashion. So give it to Gardner as probably the best. I give it to Gardner from a little different reason. At Saxon Ring, he's in front of Fernandez, and he put down a pace at the front that forced Raul into an error. And that's one of those things where that's what a champion does. He knew that to beat Raul, he had to be in front, and he had to have a pace that Raul couldn't live with. And that's exactly what happened, and Raul lost the front. Difficult track, because that's over the brow of the hill, downhill, braking. There's a lot going on there. But Gardner didn't fall off, and he technically has the same bike that Fernandez has. Yep. That doesn't dissuade me from the fact that Fernandez is probably the real deal on a Moto 2 bike, and will probably be in MotoGP on some team next year. He's definitely quick, but Gardner's got more of, like, you know, he has a lot of his father in him. I remember watching Wayne ride on 500s, and it's just that dogged determination that I don't care, I'm just going to will this motorcycle to the front. And I, you know what, I got beat, and I'm not happy about it. So I'm going to go back, and I'm going to work a whole hell of a lot harder during the week, either on the bicycle, in the gym, or whatever it is in training. And I'm going to rethink about everything that I did that whole weekend, study all my race notes, study all my setup notes, and try to find where I can make myself that little bit better. And that's what makes champions.
And that's why he's got a MotoGP ride next year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Remy on the bigger bike. As he's gotten on bigger bikes, he's done better each time. And I think, you know, he's Australian. There's this very distinct similarity to how the Australians ride and how the Americans ride, kind of because they both have that dirt track thing that comes up. They both ride really large displacement bikes in their home countries, you know, 1,000cc super bikes or super sport bikes, that kind of thing. So they're on fairly big bikes early on in their lives. So when you put them on a little Moto 3 bike, they're not, you know, Kelso looks pretty good on a Moto 3 bike. I'll say that. So it's not impossible, but it's just, I think it's more of like that homey, comforty feel when you're on a big power bike and it does powerful things. So good for that.
Agreed.
Let's see. So what's shocked you the most in Moto 2? Anything? Something? Nothing?
Not a shock so much as just hard to understand really what's gone wrong in the Sky team, really, with Bezzecchi and Vietti, who, okay, you know, he's doing what we often see with Moto 3 riders, that take some time to get to grips with a Moto 2 bike. And Vietti has been, I would say, sounds a bit harsh, but a bit disappointing given the pedigree that we were told that he had. Didn't have an illustrious Moto3 stint either, but won some races. But Bezzecchi, though, just has lost his form completely. It's hard to know really what's gone wrong there. I mean, he is consistent. You can give him that. And he is finishing most of the races, but he's a kind of fourth or fifth place man, it seems, at every race, and just drifting further and further back. So it's not so much of a shock as a bit of a disappointment, really, that he's not in the title fight.
Okay. I'm going to go with Lowe's and his inconsistency.
I wasn't going to say him because I'm British.
Yeah, I know. I had to do it. I just had to turn the knife in the back, you know. And I'm going to go with shocked, because Lowe's had such great form, and he had that one crash, kind of, you know, broke his arm, still rode great for like the last two races to try to salvage a championship, you know, didn't accomplish it. I thought, okay, got this off season to heal up. You're back with the same bike, same team. We know Mark VDS is a great Moto2 team. You know, they've had championships, and he came out and he started off in the desert. It's like, okay, this is Lowe's year again. He's got it. This year, he's just going to be a little more consistent. And then he went four races in a row without scoring points, where he just kind of launched himself to the moon a couple of times. You know, there was a couple of bad breaks in there, but not, I'm like, just going, gosh, what happened, Sam? You know, you're really better than this. And, you know, hopefully he takes these 5 weeks, resets, and mounts a charge back up again. He starts winning some races. Anything's possible.
Yeah, he just needs to find some momentum again, doesn't he? But, yeah. You know, when you're watching the race coverage and you hear that horrible sound off, you know, off camera of the gravel scratching noise, you just kind of know that it's going to be Sam Lowe's that has crashed before the camera goes across and looks at him picking himself out of the gravel trap. So, yeah, I really like him. He's a great rider, fast rider, but yeah, he just has to be more consistent. And it's hard to see how he can claw his way back, given the form that the KTM squad have.
Yep. All right, let's go to Let's go to MotoGP. So, best race of the year, MotoGP.
Been some good races this year.
There have been.
I'm going to go with Sachsenring for a couple of reasons, really. It was one thing I love in racing, whether it's four wheels or two, is a little sprinkle of rain here and there. It does so much to spice things up. And I know it didn't really rain exactly in Sachsenring, but it was kind of the sort of rain that messes with your head, I think, just the odd drop on the visor, I guess. And Marc Márquez just knew that was his best chance to win a race for quite some time. And he just pulled the pin and built that, what was it, 3 or 4 second gap so quickly. It was just amazing to watch, really. So it was just a good race in that regard. It had a little bit of everything, really. And I personally, although it's a little bit of a go-kart track in many respects, the Sachsenring, it is one of my favorite races. I love that downhill plunge, or the two downhill plunges that they do. It's spectacular. I've actually been to that track a few years ago, and it's a great place to watch from the track side as well. So I would definitely go back there someday. So yeah, that gets my vote.
I'm going with Sachsenring too. Agree with everything you said, but I'm looking at it just a little bit differently. I love it when someone has overcome such an obstacle and gone back, not only just to do what it is that they do in sport, but then went back to the top to be a winner again. You know, I think Tiger Woods in golf kind of did that, kind of dominated, lost his swing or whatever. I think he had to have back surgery. I'm not a big golf fan. I'm trying to make an analogy. And he came back and won another Masters, I think, after that. You know, for Marquez to have had everything that was wrong with his broken humerus, the 3 or 4 operations that he had, the big infection that was in there, the bone graft, to basically get back on that motorcycle and what is arguably one of the fastest motorcycles you can possibly race at, with some of the most competitive times that we've seen in a long time, where every factory is fast, for him to come back and win, although being on a, you know, left-handed track, a counterclockwise going circuit, for him to come back and win, I thought was fantastic. It just, you know, the look on his face when he had done it was something special.
Yeah,
it harkens back to the doing almost losing his leg kind of thing in Assen, and I want to say 92, I think, is when that was.
Somewhere around.
That was 92. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I wanted to see. So I'm going with that.
It
So who's the
was
best rider?
stunning comeback. Stunning comeback. You can't, if he doesn't win another race this year,
Doesn't matter. He's
you can never take that one away. And that was an amazing achievement. Yeah.
All right, best rider?
There's actually quite a few people you could pick on this one.
This is a tough one, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not just saying this because he's the guy that's leading the championship, but I think Quartararo's just had a, stellar year. And particularly when you look on the other side of that garage, as we were talking about at the beginning, you have to take your hat off to the guy. I mean, he was stunning on the Petronas bike, and was showing up Vinales and Rossi then as well, and he's just carried on that momentum. So it's, for me, it's a little bit hard to look past him. Not my favorite rider by any stretch of the imagination, but yeah, he's just been outstanding all year.
I'm gonna go with Miguel Oliveira.
Yeah.
I felt like with all the problems that KTM had with their chassis, with the fact that Michelin removed the hard tire and gave them only an asymmetric front to work with, for them to build a new chassis and then for Miguel to have a run there in the middle of what a win and a couple of podiums there and that second, he finished second to Marquez at Sachsenring, that was pretty impressive. I thought, it showed that he is fast and that the KTM is fast and that the factory is capable of making changes. Given a rider that gives specific feedback, they can change the bike to do what that rider needs, and it shows. So I'm gonna go with that one.
Yeah, it's a great shout. Oliveira is one of my favorite riders, in fact. I think he's, again, he is so consistent. He doesn't crash very often. He did crash at Portimao, but we know that they were having big issues getting the front of that bike to work with the new tyres. So yeah, but you could, in MotoGP, there are so many riders doing outstanding work. I mean, I think you have to acknowledge Aleix Espargaró as well. I mean, he's having a brilliant year on the best bike that he's ever ridden in the class. Probably, okay, he had a couple of years on the Suzuki, but they were still developing the bike heavily at that stage. So it's such a quality field all the way down, really. You could pick it just about anybody.
I agree. I'll agree with you there. You could pick a host of guys out of there. I know they'll be good. But what is the most shocking thing for this part so far in Moto GP?
I'm going to go with Zipgate. This is a black mark against Quartararo. This was again maybe not shocking, but one of the more bizarre things that we've seen in quite a few seasons. I never really quite got to the bottom of all the speculation as to what happened. Watching it back, I thought what had happened was that he lost the front going into turn one, and this was in Barcelona, right? And it looked to me as if he lost the front and he quickly caught it and corrected it, but that might have set his airbag off. I don't know. That might be completely wrong. But it was immediately after that that he started to try get his chest protector out. So I don't know if the zip came undone all of its own accord or whether he started that process to get the protector out. I don't know what it was, but it was just one of the craziest things I've seen. And quite frankly, he should have been black flagged.
I agree 100%.
Falling off and going down the road with, half open leathers. I mean, he would have been peeled like a banana, and that would have been not good for the sport. So they, race direction, who are very quick to hand out penalties to everybody, should have given themselves a red card on that one, I'm afraid.
So my moment is the penalties at Mugello for running over the green. And you had it was Mir and Oliveira, and it's like Oliveira, oh no, your penalty. Mir goes to second. No, wait a minute, Mir did the same thing. Hold on, you guys are just gonna go back to where you were. Really, guys? Come
Yeah,
on.
it's not a good look.
You that's the I you know, I've said this about Formula One, and I hate when they're dishing out penalties after the race has happened. Oh, you got a 5 second penalty now, so that puts you back to fifth instead of fourth or whatever. I am the firm believer that when I am at the racetrack and I leave, I know who won,
Yep.
who was on the podium. Okay, four, five, six, I may not have an idea of who was where, but I know who won and why. Now, they did correct it relatively quickly, but it was like one of those, like, are you kidding me moments? Seriously, guys?
And it is an unedifying sight to see a bike come into Parc Fermé and then have to be wheeled out again and somebody else sheepishly come along because a technicality has happened. I mean, I know they have to police track limits, and I don't really know what the safest solution to this problem is, but and if you give them 3 mil then, or 2 mil or half an inch in your language, you know, they'll go to the edge of that and then they want a bit more. So you never solve the problem unless you put a solid barrier there, like on, you know, on the real roads, which is a clear delineation of a place that you don't want to go, a stone wall or a tree. I don't know what the answer is to this, but it is a very unedifying sight when you have these leaderboards changing, you know, as people are coming in. You've got people punching the air because they think they've won, and then they're demoted to second or third. It's not good. Yeah. So
my fear is we're at the last race of the year. It could be any race, any championship is on the line, and now we get a track limit of a quarter of an inch, 6 mils for you, that causes somebody to lose a championship. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Rules are rules. I get there's a hard line, there's a hard limit to things, but we need to figure some. There's got to be an in between somewhere. Like, those guys were only finishing off a corner off of the curbs, and there happens to be a green patch there. They're going to use it. So just allow it. Paint a white line out there and say, guys, you can't go over that part of it. Because if you do, you're going to be in the grass at that point. So,
yeah.
Again, don't know how we're going to fix or solve all of that. But let's move on to the last thing that we want to do here. A little word association game that I think you've kind of hooked us up here with Rich. So I'm going to give some teams, some riders. You're going to give me one word that describes them. Are you ready?
Yep. Okay. I'm ready.
So, Monster Yamaha, Maverick Vinales.
Confusing. Very confusing, and getting more confusing by the day.
Good choice of words for that one. How about Quartararo?
I'm going with champion. I can't see anybody's going to catch him. He's fast, and he doesn't make many mistakes. He doesn't crash, or very, very rarely. He can't hit a golf ball to save his life, but that's not a big problem. So, he's a champion, I think, in waiting this year.
Okay. How about Petronas Yamaha? Valentino Rossi.
Okay. The risk of, you know, masses of hate mail, I've got to say retirement. It's time for him to hang up the helmet and, you know, focus his energies on, you know, still being in the paddock. You know, mm-hmm. promoting the, you know, Dorna are desperate for him to stay there. That's, you know, part of the reason why he's got the MotoGP team coming. So make the most of that. And as you said, Jim, do a few wild cards, keep the fans happy. And who he puts in that team is quite another question, but that's probably for another show.
Yes, I think so. Franco Morbidelli.
Frustrated. I feel sorry for Frankie, really. Doing sterling work on quite an old bike now. And I'm fairly worried that he's going to get overlooked for the move up to the Monster team.
Believe you're right.
I hope he gets it.
I hope he does too. Aprilia, Aleix Espargaró.
I would say he's close. You know, he's close to where he needs to be, or whether it's him or it's the bike, we don't really know, because again, he's a rider that's been able to bite the screen and pull out a lap for as long as we can remember. I mean, he worked wonders on the CRT bike. I can't remember what it was called now, but and it was not a period of MotoGP that we particularly look back on with fondness, I think. It was kind of the souped-up superbike engine, wasn't it, in a prototype chassis, I think, but I can't remember what it was called. But he's always quick. But yeah, again, as I said earlier on this year, he just seems to work his way backwards, whether it's the bike just doesn't work the tyres quite as well as the others, or whether it's him. We don't know, but he's close, but no cigar yet.
Yep. His teammate, Lorenzo Salvadori.
Completely forgotten.
I would have, if you hadn't written it down, I'd probably forgot who was his teammate, because it's just nowhere to be found.
He did, in fairness to him, again, going back to the wet, dry conditions in Le Mans, he did put in a very good race. And I always like to point out that, you know, people that can ride fast in the wet, I mean, these are all top guys, aren't they? I mean, we wouldn't see which way they went on a racetrack. I certainly wouldn't. So it's by no means meant as a criticism, but, you know, probably it's the poison chalice of the second bike in Aprilia as well. I mean, ask Scott Redding, Sam Lowe's, any number of people that have been on the second bike. They don't seem to want to run a second rider historically in that team. So we don't know if he's on a very old spec bike or quite what's going on. But yeah, a bit sad to see, really.
HRC, Mark Marquez.
Resilient as hell, isn't he? I mean, you just can't, you cannot stop him.
Yeah, I'm not the brilliant for a guy who's got an arm and a half.
Yeah. I'm going to declare I'm not the biggest fan of Mark Marquez. I mean, he's a fantastic rider, but it's just something I just doesn't quite gel with me. But you know, he's a multiple champion. He's a fantastic rider. But a lot of respect for what he's doing coming back from that injury.
Paul Espargaró.
I think he's, the word I wrote was fuming. I think that's probably more himself than anything else, but quite why he chose to leave KTM. He's kind of a little bit like the Fernando Alonso of the MotoGP world. He just always seems to be in the wrong place. he must be looking back with envious eyes at the Works KTM squad.
Yeah. I would change, if you're asking me one word to describe Paul Espargaró, I would write disappointing.
Yep.
I mean, for coming from the KTM to Honda, I get the Honda's not the KTM, but they're incredibly similar, and you have not yet showed me what you showed me on a KTM where you grab that motorcycle by the triple tree and you will it onto something, and you haven't done that with that bike yet. So I would change that one.
He crashes far, far too much, mm-hmm. And he did the same on the KTM and the Tech 3, for that matter, as well.
That's true. He did crash the Tech 3 a lot, too. Let's look at Pramac Ducati with Johann Zarco.
Resurgent for me. We thought his career was over a couple of years ago when he walked out of the KTM ride, in fact, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To come back.
I thought he was done.
Yeah, unbelievable. He had a really strong year last year on the lower class Ducati, let's say. But now he's on the Pramac. Well, second in the championship speaks for itself.
Yep. Jorge Martin, his teammate.
Yeah, he's promising. Whether this is the vagaries of the Qatar track, which some riders seem to love, and it's a bit of an oddball race, it's not really a true indicator of form, I don't think, if you look at it season on season. But had a stellar start to the year. Nobody could quite believe what they were seeing, and then got bitten very hard at the next round, by the time they moved from the two races in Qatar anyway. Yep. I think he came off in, was it the free practice three, perhaps?
Yeah, quarter mile.
Bust himself up a bit, and he hasn't looked the same since. So the promise is clearly there, but yeah, struggling a little bit, one would say.
I'd go with potential. I would change that to potential, but it's potential promising, same. Suzuki now, Alex Rins.
Yeah, suffering badly. Really disappointing this year. I think it's clear that Suzuki are really missing the shape-shifting device.
Yes.
So it's tempting to say. Plus, Rins is quite a tall rider as well, so he's probably got quite an awkward style compared to his teammate, so he's probably having to go in a certain direction on the setup. But you can't help but feel they're just trying to gain so much into the corners to make up for what they're lacking coming out, and he's losing the front a lot, but his teammate isn't, so it doesn't look too good for him at the moment, but he needs to find some consistency, otherwise he's going to lose his seat.
Yes, he will. His teammate, Mir.
Yeah. Like last year, really. Consistent is the word for him. He's always there or thereabouts, a bit further back this year. But again, I think that's more to do with the bike than him, again, because they're lacking that shapeshifter, which is not a device I condone in MotoGP, I have to say. I hate it. It's like DRS in Formula One should be taken away. But he won't win another title this year on the form that he's got or the bike's got at the moment. Which is a shame, but he's put in strong rides. It's not as if he's disappeared from view altogether, and he's had a few good races just recently, but until they can qualify much further up the grid, those guys are just gonna struggle in the mid pack or crash.
Yep. The factory KTM boys, Brad Binder.
Yeah, worrying for me.
I agree. That's a great one, because he's vanished.
Yeah, and an odd time, therefore, to give him such a long-term contract. but I think the timing of that is slightly bemusing. I get that you know, he's one of the chosen riders within the KTM family, so they want to keep hold of him, so okay. But again, it is a form-based business, and he has been absent really from pretty much all of the races this year, as far as I can recall.
Yeah, that's what gets me, and you make a great point. But when KTM was making their own chassis for Moto 2, they had a lot of problems in that year. And Binder figured it out, got a better chassis, got going on it, won the final four or five races, and almost beat Alex to the world title. Why he can't come to grips with this one is a mystery. But somebody who definitely is not having a mystery with that new chassis is Miguel Oliveira.
Yeah, well, you chose him, I think, as one of your you know, picks for the year, and my word for him is outstanding. I mean, as I said, he is one of my favorite riders, Miguel Oliveira. Struggled at first, and we know why. It was the, you know, the change of the rubber that didn't work with the chassis to start off with. But since they figured that one out, he's been in absolutely outstanding form. And given how consistently fast and unlikely to crash he seems to be, even though he's 71 points adrift at the moment, it would be very easy to see him making his way up, certainly into the top three. Whether he can challenge for the title from that far back, I don't know. But he's going to be running second, third at most races, I think, for the rest of this season.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they do at Austria, because they've got two there, and those are where we go to after the break. I'm interested to see how KTM does there. I mean, if Oliveira walks out of there with 50 points, game on.
Yeah, he won there last year, so he's going to be confident.
Yes. Tech 3, Petrucci.
Yeah, journeyman, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It was an odd move, really, for KTM, or for Tech 3 to take him on, I thought, because, you know, again, he's a very tall rider, you know, presumably, like a, you know, starves himself most of the year round to keep the weight down. And just, I mean, he was poor on the Ducati, really. I know he had a couple of good races, but hard to see really why he's not in World Superbike at the moment.
Right. My word for this would have been placeholder, because I think KTM knew what was coming to some extent.
Okay.
They just needed someone to be there for right now. So better someone who has some experience, who it can give you an occasional good ride. And if it's a wet race, I wouldn't put it past him to be on a podium.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Then that's Lekuona then.
Yeah, my word for him was kind of hoping that you know, his constant crashes and transgressions, you know, don't land him back in Moto 2, which I suspect they probably will.
Yeah, I think he's going back.
I kind of like him because he's got a really distinctive style on the bike. The way he leans off the front, I think, is really, and holds his head in position, I think, is really quite quite unique. So I kind of like his style on the bike, and he is quick, but he does throw it into the gravel too regularly, I think, to really warrant having a place there anymore. And I think there's been some fairly choppy words from Hervé Poncharal aimed at both of his riders this year, so one would assume that both of those seats are going to be filled by other people next year. We know one of them, but I think both of them will be different next year.
Venti Ducati, Luca Marini.
Yeah, nepotism, unfortunately. Again, in fairness to the guy, I mean, he was pretty strong in Moto 2 and did challenge for the title, but I'm not really very sure he'd be in the team if it wasn't for his older half-brother.
Yeah,
I'm talking quietly, because, again, I know it's not a very popular view, but I'm trying to think when it was. He was pretty decent this year at Sachsenring, I think it was. I think in some of the practice sessions, or he maybe even got through to the, you know, the last stages of qualifying. So he's got flashes of speed, but whether he has that ultimate pace and consistency to warrant that place. I mean, there are only 22 of these bikes, and it's a bit debatable, really, I think, whether he should be on one of them.
So Bastianini, I think he's sort of in the same boat, right?
Yeah. I mean, Moto 2 champion last year, so warrants the place. But yeah, I think he was Moto 2 world champion last year.
Yeah, he took it from Lowe's because he just was more consistent for that last bit. So.
You know, had that weird thing in Mugello, I think it was, where he rear-ended Zarco going to the grid.
Yeah.
So, but again, you don't, in fairness, you know, the Avintia Ducati is not, you know, the top spec machinery, so you tend not to see much of them once the races get going. Yep. So it's not his fault for that reason that he's a little bit anonymous. But, you know, Zarco was doing much better things in that team last year.
All right. So LCR Honda, Takaki Nakagami.
Yeah, really inconsistent, really fast, but very unreliable. And he's quick over a lap. He seems to be a guy that's quick in practice and can turn in some pretty strong qualifying. But again, a bit like Aleix Espargaró, seems to go backwards in the races far too often for me. I'd quite like to see him on a Yamaha or something, you know, just to test whether a more agreeable bike might just suit his style a little bit more.
I'd like to see him take Rins's place at Suzuki. I think that bike would suit him better, but it may not have the power, so I don't know. Alex Marquez.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I'm going with overrated on this one.
You know, I don't know how to rate Alex, because I agree that it's his surname that's getting him places. It's like Formula One, the Schumacher brothers. There's the one
who's
really damn good, and that was the Michael. And then there was Ralph, who was like, had his day here and there, but he ain't Michael.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's that's tough. I mean, the kid was a Moto 3 world champion. He was a Moto 2 world champion. He's riding on a really hard bike. I want to try to cut him some slack, but no, I think he's not long for that. Especially when you've got, again, there's a lot of hungry guys coming from Moto 2 that are ready to go, who I think would be just as good or better at maybe less of the price.
Yep, agreed.
There. All right, let's just finish this off with the final MotoGP team. That is the Factory Ducati's Jack Miller.
Yeah, he kind of seems to be fading. Had a shaky start and then a purple patch, you know, with those couple of back-to-back wins that he had. And then is just sort of steadily dropping back into mid-pack again. Disappointing for him. I guess he's probably one of the guys, one of the quite a few guys that's going to be enjoying this summer break and just trying to get a reset in place and come back punching a bit harder. I really like nobody. I don't think anybody doesn't like Jack Miller. He's very, very good value. And I really hope he comes back strong. He does need to.
Yeah. He's another one who needs the break desperately. Him and Lowe's need the break, and they need to figure it out and get back. Yeah. And finally, Francisco Bagnaia.
Yeah, Bagnaia, he's building, isn't he? He's kind of up and down a bit, and his qualifying form is...
He has to fix qualifying.
Yeah.
He has to.
If you look at the way he came through in the race at Assen at the last round, did a brilliant job, but just
in Sachsenring too, right?
Yes, but always from far too far back. So,
too far back.
But the way if he can figure that out, you'd have him as a big contender for next year, I think, championship wise, because he's clearly very, very, very fast.
Yep. All right. Well, I think that does it for the show, Rich. Good to have you on.
Thanks, Jim. Yep.
We will get out of here. Again, if you guys want to comment on the show, you can just do it by sending us feedback and send it to motopod@motopodcast.com. It goes to all the hosts. Everybody will be able to chime in on it if you got something there. If it's really good, we'll wind up using it on the show as we've done before. And if you need to reach me, you can get to me at MotoRGV on Instagram and Twitter. Rich, where can people find you if they want to have a conversation and ask you pretty things like how BSB is going?
Yeah, well, BSB is one of the things that with some input on the show, I'm hoping I can, you know, bring a little bit of BSB back to the show. A bit like when Dave and Martin were on a few years ago. So, yeah, I'll be looking to keep things fresh on the BSB side of things. I'm going to have to look up my Twitter handle because it's not something I've ever used very much. I think it's at Richard Jarrett, to be honest, but I better check on that. But given that I've said a nasty thing about Valentino Rossi, it's probably better that people don't know my Twitter account for the moment. So I'll avoid some of the comments, hopefully. But yeah, I think it's at Richard Jarrett on Twitter. But I'll double check on that, and I'll update next time.
All right. That sounds fair enough. All right, everyone. We will be back again. Probably going to be back after the first race at Austria, unless there's some massive newsy thing that comes out that we need to talk about. So look for us after Austria. Zoom, zoom.